About 80 million travelers will head 50 miles from home during Thanksgiving week. That is nearly 2 million more people than last year.
If you're driving, we do have some good news. Gas prices are expected to drop below $3 a gallon in many places before Thanksgiving. And that's a nice change from last year's average, which was $3.26.
ABC Stephanie Ramos, the TSA, also projecting one of its busiest weeks in the air as well. President-elect Donald Trump naming a new attorney general nominee. Pam Bondi is the former Florida attorney general and is Trump's second choice after former Congressman Matt Gaetz, who pulled his name from consideration. Quickly moving water, even as little as 6 inches of it. Sonoma County Fire's Karen Hancock says it can be deadly.
Lose your balance and move a vehicle. It can lift a vehicle and move it off the roadway.
Lots of that going on in Northern California, where torrential rain and high winds are raising the risk of flash flooding and mudslides. This is ABC News.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
I'm Lisa Hale with WISS News. Your news roundup in quick podcast form. You can find it anytime at the WISS website at WISS.FM. For 98.3 WISS News, I'm Lisa Hale. The Wisconsin Department of Administration has released a report estimating that the state will have a $4 billion, that's billion with a B, dollar surplus at the end of the fiscal year. According to a press release, that $4 billion surplus is in addition to the nearly $2 billion rainy day fund. In a statement, Governor Tony Evers says he wants to use the surplus funding to continue making critical investments in the state's economy. The Department of Revenue also shared tax revenue estimates for the next 3 years, showing small increases of about 2-3%. After the election, some black Wisconsinites got text messages, often calling them by name and telling them to show up at a certain place and time to be enslaved. Savannah Tomei Olson reports.
Police are investigating where those messages came from. But of course, for those recipients, these messages stoked fear right away, knowing that whoever sent them knows exactly who they are, knows their race, and may even know where they live. Cybersecurity professor Chad Johnson at UW Stevens Point says most data brokers have no less than 15 data points on every American, including your age, ethnicity, detailed contact information, maybe even your social security number.
And since there's no regulation over who can buy those, of course, it could be other advertising agencies. It could be other platforms. But there's also nothing stopping, for example, a white supremacist movement from buying that information for purposes exactly like this.
Currently, there's no comprehensive federal law that protects Americans' data and privacy. However, we have a new state privacy law that will go into effect here next year. I'm Savannah Tomei Olson.
Check out New Wisco Weekend, Saturdays at 8, Sundays at 11. I'm Lisa Hale, 98.3 WISS News. For news anytime, log on to WISS.FM.
The Packers missing some players. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Green Bay Packers host the 49ers at Lambeau Field. But head coach Matt LaFleur says they'll likely be without two of their best defensive starters. Cornerback Jaire Alexander has a torn PCL, suffered 3 weeks ago in Jacksonville. Then at Wednesday's practice, rookie linebacker Edgerrin Cooper pulled a hamstring.
Did not practice for Jaire and Edgerrin Cooper.
Any concern about Sunday for him?
Yes.
Kickoff at 3:25. College football, Wisconsin heads to Nebraska to play the Cornhuskers at Memorial Stadium. Game time tomorrow, 2:30. Nebraska, 1.5-point favorites. NBA, it's the Bucks and the Pacers tonight in Milwaukee.
Okay, we have an incredible team coming in. Indiana beat us, I think, 4 or 5 times last year. No. Way more. 7 times, 7, 8 times. We got to play defense. We got to move the ball. They want to play fast. We got to sprint back. We got to take guys serious. But we're trending towards the right direction right now, so I'm happy.
That's Giannis Antetokounmpo with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
Cloudy and a little breezy today. We'll get to around 45 this afternoon with wind out of the northwest at 15 to 25. Tonight, 32. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy with a little more sunshine in the afternoon. 42 the high, then on Sunday, cloudy with a high of 46. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Currently, it's 42.
Lena Bloom for The Bail Project. Imagine you're stuck in a jail cell and you can't afford bail, and someone offers you a way out. Just plead guilty and you can go home and kiss your kids goodnight. What do you do? What thousands have. You plead guilty whether you are or not. Cash bail makes poverty a crime. That's why the Bail Project helps those who can't afford it while fighting to end cash bail. Because freedom should be free.
Brought to you by the Ad Council.
The Dom Salvia Show.
State Senator-elect Jody Habesh-Sinikin. What's the best way, do you think, it is to approach a difference in not just opinion, but in what we perceive as facts with those that may not be aware or don't agree with it?
First, having a conversation. Try to get an understanding of what is really bothering them and try to offer solutions at the state level or at the local level where there can be progress.
The Dom Salvia Show. Weekdays from 4 till 6 on the Civic Media Radio Network and on the Civic Media app.
You're listening to Oshkosh Air Support, WISS, home for the Todd Allball Show.
Good morning. Earl Ingram Show. Sandy Williams sitting in for Earl Ingram. He'll be back. Maybe he won't be back next week. I think next week he's off. But anyway, he'd rather be here today than what he's doing. We're talking about the incoming cabinet and the process of what I would describe as the king appointing his court. The music relates all to King for a Day, and I do have a fear that the trend we see is one in which the government that's incoming wants to be much more authoritarian and much more centralized than the outgoing government. And whether that poses a hazard or not, I happen to think it does. I think the safeguards we have and the checks and balances between the executive branch and the rest of government were worked out over time carefully and are going to be dismantled maybe potentially very quickly. We have someone on the line. I guess we have Gary from Sussex on the line. Is that correct? Gary?
Yes, you do, Sandy. Hey, first of all, I want to – good. Hey, I want to hope that Earl does well. I had a colonoscopy almost 20 years ago. I'm 72. I was 50 when I had it done.
Yeah, it's a rite of passage, right? Yeah.
Yeah. They found precancerous polyps in me, and they cut them out. And then I went back for every year for 3 years, and they said I'm fine. But I keep getting them all the time. But if I did not go,
let me tell you, like I said, the medical industry is so happy when they find a polyp because it's a very expensive procedure. If they didn't find any, they would have had to wait 10 years. So, it was maybe lose win as far as you're concerned. But go ahead.
I'm happy. I hope that everything turns out fine. Now, I do want to talk to you about, yesterday I asked Earl a question, and I said, do you hope that Donald Trump fails and hopes that this country goes to hell, or do you hope that he does well and the country does well, we all prosper? And he was so mad, he didn't actually come out and say, I hope he fails. I hope our country goes to hell. I don't want Trump to do well. Well, don't we all want Trump to do well, our president, no matter what, and that our country will prosper under next 4 years, and then maybe the Democrats can get in there. And I always hope that whoever in power does well.
Listen, you've asked the question. I definitely hope that the the country does well. I think, you know, I think anyone who's alive and breathing wants that to be the case. I think the question will be, how do we define well? Okay, how do we define doing well? And so long as that's a properly defined term, and the country, in fact, performs well according to a definition that we can all agree upon, or that at least I can agree upon, that's what I want to have happen. I just don't want to have some important elements of our government structure broken. I think that there are things that are awfully important about the design of our government, the design of our processes, that we can't lose. But do I want things to go well? Absolutely. But I think you and I and others would have to sit down and figure out, what are we going to measure? This is what you do in business too. What are we going to measure to figure out whether we did well? And you know, if we can agree on that, and if we do well, that's absolutely what I want.
Yeah, I actually just wanted to jump in here for a second, and I think it's a little bit of a misinterpretation of what Earl meant by saying he hopes Trump fails. He's not saying he hopes the country suffers or does poorly. He is saying that the policies and the plans that Trump is proposing are going to be destructive, and he hopes Trump fails at doing those policies. But Gary, go ahead.
Okay, so that's why I explained it. I said he really kind of hummed about it, but the fact is he said he hopes that Trump fails. But if Trump does well, Calvin, that means that the country's going to do well in turn. And
we have to work on semantics here. We have to decide what doing well means. If doing well means eliminating all forms of diversity in all kinds of places, then I don't agree that I want that to happen. And if it does happen, I won't agree that we're doing well in that regard. If doing well means that we cut taxes and that the economy thrives, but the middle class doesn't, if the middle class continues to suffer, if they can't afford healthcare, if we continue to have the outcomes we have, then I won't agree that we did well. Okay, so I mean, this doing well concept is a difficult one, and we can't just say because the stock market's going up like mad that we're doing well, right? I mean, you would agree with that. You can't just look at the stock market and decide that if it's flying high that we're doing well.
No, I agree 100%.
Okay, and you can't say that we're doing well if the GDP goes up, but if the way the GDP is shared is such that we continue to have a lot of people living paycheck to paycheck in an environment that they can't that creates a financial struggle, and I don't mean just for below the middle class, but I mean a broad interpretation of a middle class, then we wouldn't be doing well either, right?
Well, yes. Now, everything is dependent on one thing. The high prices, inflation, prices at the grocery stores and whatever we buy, it all comes down to, if you look at it, it all comes down to oil. It really does. What it costs to make the stuff, driving to the stuff.
Well, Gary, that isn't true. So, I mean, we can do an economic correlation or evaluation. Oil is a basic commodity, and the price of oil will affect the price of a number of other things. Now, the price of oil is not directly tied to the price of electricity any longer. It's the price of natural gas that's tied to the price of electricity. But and so what you say is a simplification, but it's simply not true. The price of oranges will vacillate. The price of eggs will vacillate tremendously, regardless of the price of oil. So what you say is simplistic. And we'll find out. But incidentally, the price of oil isn't going to matter with respect to the price of gasoline if we don't increase refining capacity. And there is no talk of that.
Well, he's going to drill, baby, drill. But the thing is, as far as the $2 trillion that's over the budget, if we can start cutting some of this crazy spending, and some of these people that work in government that are absolutely doing nothing, just getting rid of them, as far as
how much Okay, so but your small business runs into local government much more than it runs into federal government, okay? And I've talked to small business people, and many of them are upset about building codes, they're upset about all kinds of things, which don't have anything to do with the federal government. And when the federal government gets cut, it's not going to affect building codes and the rest of that. But, you know, people talk about all that waste in government, and but the biggest programs, do you think that there's waste in the delivery of your Social Security check? Do you think that's inefficiently delivered to you, and that there are people that could get cut out of the Social Security administration?
No,
it's a very efficient
time.
It's a very efficient program. And do you think that Medicare, the administrative arm of Medicare, is an efficient operation, or do you think that it's probably delivered efficiently? Because it's a check-cutting program like Social Security.
I think it's doing well, but the fact is what I was going to say.
Okay,
about my
all right. Now, I'm just saying we're talking about the biggest components of the federal budget. I mean, the biggest expenditure components of the federal budget are run quite efficiently. So if you decide that the federal budget is whatever it is, $7 trillion, and if $4.5 trillion of that is delivered efficiently because it's basically a check-cutting program, you've got $2.5 trillion left. If you want to be efficient and cut, if you think that there's, do you think there's 20% inefficency in the rest of it? You can figure out that we're not talking about these big dollars that are, you know, the Doge, this Doge movement, the Doge agency. It's not an agency. It's run by Musk and Ramaswamy. If you cut 15% out of everything else, you're not talking about a huge amount of money. You're not talking about changing the economy. So, I mean, we like to arm wave, and yes, we should have an efficient government, but we've got to be realistic about how many dollars we can accomplish. And what the meaning of the cutting of those dollars is. I mean, it's, again, that's what you said was a simplification, just like saying that oil is the underpinning of the entire economy. It's not true. Okay, that's not true.
Well, that's my opinion. And what I was saying about my business, I only have 5 people in my business, and I have to run it as efficiently as I can. And if I had just one person flagging on a job and loafing off, and that, it would wreck my business. And the fact is, the government, with Ramaswamy and Musk looking into this stuff and trying to trim the budget, I think this is a good thing. This is not a bad thing, and it's going to help everybody. It's going to help you and me and everybody else.
No one disagrees with making the government efficient. I think everyone other than the military and the defense establishment would like to see an audit of the Defense Department. And that's probably the place with the greatest amount of waste. Okay, undoubtedly. But nobody wants to get their arms around that. Would you like to focus on the Defense Department, Gary?
Hey, thanks a lot for letting me talk so long and not interrupting me. I really do appreciate it. I love talking to you, Sandy. Good luck. Thank you.
Yeah. All right, we'll be back shortly talking more about the King's Court.
A new choice. The Fox Valley's real news and great conversation. WISS.
Not completing high school is more of a social thing than it was an academic thing. Even though all these years have passed, I still had that longing to have my diploma.
At age 30, Carissa finished her high school diploma.
If you're even considering getting your high school diploma, you can do it.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. That's finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Iron Mike Tyson and Jake Paul, the YouTuber. They're likely, this is just me wildly speculating, might have been a wee bit of a gentleman's agreement. Try to make it look good, but nobody's actually going to try to knock anybody out.
I actually put a bet on that, and I bet it for Jake Paul to win, just because I knew it was staged. Mike Tyson was going to do what he's going to do. Clearly obvious he could have knocked him out. He just didn't want to do it.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
From the lakeshore to Lake Winnebago.
Door to Fond du Lac counties.
Northeast Wisconsin is special for many different reasons. I'm Lisa Hale.
And I'm Terry Barr. Family and fun.
Safe communities and friends. We're featuring all of it as part of New Wisco Weekend, a news magazine show just for you. And highlighting what makes the Fox Valley and Green Bay area a great place to live.
Join us.
New Wisco Weekend, Saturday mornings at 8, Sundays at 11 on WGBW and WISS and the Civic Media app.
Fear you may be missing out? We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. Enjoy listening live or catch up by finding the podcast at civicmedia.us or wherever you enjoy listening to your podcasts. Missed your favorite show live on air? It's easy to find what you enjoy wherever you listen to podcasts, including Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. And we're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app.
You're listening to Oshkosh Air Support WISS, the Valley's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Welcome to the Earl Ingram Show. Sandy Williams sitting in for Earl Ingram. That's Sting, the King of Pain. I'm talking this morning about my fear that what we're watching in Washington is the king installing his court, as much as we're watching a president create his cabinet. And I've been talking about as well the trend, what seems to be the ideological trend of the right towards authoritarianism, towards a much stronger, a much more of a strongman president. And we have an elected president who seems to have loyalty and fealty to the president as a primary basis for his appointments. And, you know, I think we can talk about some of the other cabinet members. I think the next one we'll talk about is Peter Hegseth, his nominee to be the Secretary of Defense, and what all that portends. But we do have some callers. We've got Jean from Eau Claire. Jean?
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. Very, very interesting show. Great show this morning. I agree with LA Tom and you, of course, because this hasn't happened overnight. This has been deliberate, and it's been tried in states at the same time. I've been following it since, well, I used to live in a city, and then I moved rural. And I didn't get any information. It drove me bananas because I didn't have cable and the internet service was really poor, if you got it at all. And I started listening to the radio, and I would hear the messaging starting early in the morning all the way through the evening. Same message over and over and over again. The libs and all of the really negative things on Obama when he ran, on Mary Burke when she ran the day before the election. They called and said Mary Burke was fired by her father. And that was a big lie, but there was no way to respond. I did my one call per day. But anyway, this is programming, neuro-linguistic programming. You hit a thing, you get an emotion, and it sticks in people's heads. They don't even try to rationalize. Then I started talking to people who, you know, had very, very negative attitudes toward lips and anything they did, and everything they did, they were ripping the people off, and all these different things, and they couldn't explain why. This is subconscious. And there were psychologists, my background psych, and people who worked in that area saying, this is dangerous, you need to stop this. But it's gotten to a point that it's like, we need a national deprogramming if anybody knows anybody that needs to start doing this. However, when Gary brings up furnace, his furnace business, and I think he does air conditioning, I'm not sure, but I'll tell you something. I admire that, and that takes a specialist to be able to do it. Not anybody can do it. And there was a very wealthy person who I heard with my own ears who was all upset because he had to pay the furnace man to come to his house, and he got what the furnace man made for hours in a half an hour or 15 minutes. But they was outraged. Now, would you like somebody like that going through your furnace business that doesn't even know anything about furnaces? I think it's really important that people pay attention to this. Yeah, there's a lot of people who are very, very wealthy, very successful, that can't do a checkbook because they have their people doing it. There's a lot of people that don't understand how different areas are run. They have no education whatsoever in it.
So your point here is that these appointments to the cabinet who have no experience in what it is the cabinet does, but might have money, that their wealth doesn't really mean that they're well qualified for the job. Is that where you're headed with this?
Yes, I am. And I was trying to go around it a different way because I thought maybe some people could identify it with their personal, you know, like telling somebody going through a restaurant or a store or restaurant and saying, oh, yeah, you can put this stuff on the market even longer. It's in a can. We don't need expiration dates. That's BS, you know.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Different things like that, ridiculous things that we know maybe, but some people who don't even do their own grocery shopping, who don't even clean their own cars, who don't even do those types of things, well, they can't be in charge of this, you know.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think what you pointed out is one of the dangers of making loyalty the sole basis for appointment and ideological purity because, you know, the Defense Department, for instance, Peter Hegseth, this guy who's been appointed to that, has no experience running tens of thousands of people in a business, in an organization. And, you know, if you're going to run a big organization, it should be important that you have some experience running a big organization. I think we have Cindy from Appleton on. Cindy?
Yep. Good morning, Sandy. Well, first of all, I'd like to respond to Gary because these Republicans just seem to me like they only care about themselves. They don't care about anyone else. I, for one, don't want us to drill, baby, drill, because I give a damn about the environment. And, I mean, the last 4 years Trump was in, he did nothing for anybody except the rich. That's what he's going to do again. So the rich are going to do well. The rest of us are going to suffer.
Well, that was my point to Gary in terms of, you know, I think everyone wants the country to do well. I think what we need to convene a meeting on is to figure out what it means for the country to do well, you know. And I think for too long, there's been a lot of breastfeeding. For instance, when the economy, when some measurements of the economy are doing great, there's breastfeeding amongst the leaders to say, you know, the economy is doing great. Well, that doesn't help Tom, Dick, and Mary if they aren't doing great. And I think the last two elections where the incumbents got beaten had a lot to do with Tom, Dick, and Mary not sharing in the wealth like they would and should like to. We'll be back more to talk about the king and his court after the break. There's a little black spot on the sun today. It's the same old thing as yesterday.
From From Oshkosh to Nina, this is 98.3 WISS. This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
For 98.3 WISS News, I'm Lisa Hale. Blustery and brutal as the temperature shifted and snow painted the state's landscape for the first time this season yesterday. Meteorologist Brittany Merlot has more.
Areas in the Fox Valley and Lakeshore picked up the most, coming down heavy at times and dropping visibility drastically. Totals piled up for most areas at around 2 to 5 inches. But in Slinger and Beaver Dam, reports hit a high of 6.8 inches, well over a half a foot. With winter weather advisories alongside wind advisories, waves crashed along the shores of the Great Lakes at heights reaching 12 feet, pushing gale warnings into effect as well. Now, Lake Enhancement was the main player in the snow piles because the colder air rushed over the warmer waters, and winds were clocked gusting up to 46 miles per hour in Door County's Gills Rock. Flipping to rain through the afternoon, a majority of it will melt, but the storm was needed. 46% of the state is still in a drought, so this will help areas in the southeast the most. However, this leaves far northern parts of the state still in a severe drought because they missed out on some of the heavier totals this round. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot.
As Wisconsin hunters prepare for the beginning of the gun deer hunt season, which starts tomorrow, by the way, DNR officials are warning of a potentially smaller overall harvest. The number of registered hunters has dropped steadily over the previous years, and it stands at around 600,000 this year. With declining interest in hunting, mild weather conditions, and the latest possible start to this hunting season, the overall harvest numbers could suffer. Officials are also reminding hunters to have their deer checked for chronic wasting disease and registered online. I'm Lisa Hale, 98.3 WISS News. For news anytime, log on to WISS.FM.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Wicked's weekend is here, and Wicked and Gladiator have high hopes for a box office splash. Wicked is expected to be the box office winner, with Universal Studios hoping for a $100 to $110 million opener. Paramount is hoping Gladiator 2 pulls in about $65 million, which would be a healthy start for a film that cost $250 million to make. Even those healthy estimates would have this twosome fall short of Barbenheimer's opening weekend, which pulled in $235 million a year and a half ago. Actress Rosemarie DeWitt recently appeared on the Drew Barrymore Show and said her husband, Ron Livingston, was so despised for his role as Jack Berger on Sex and the City that he couldn't even walk in New York City without rabid fans yelling and screaming at him. Ironically, when Livingston wanders through an office, he gets constant reminders about his TPS reports. Guy can't catch a break. For more showbiz fun, tune into Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
Cloudy and a little breezy today. We'll get to around 45 this afternoon with wind out of the northwest at 15 to 25. Tonight, 32. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy with a little more sunshine in the afternoon. 42 the high, then on Sunday, cloudy with a high of 46. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Currently, it's 42.
Doctors Without Borders is delivering life-saving medical care where it's needed most, in communities around the world. From bandaging war-wounded patients in Sudan to providing clean drinking water in Haiti, we're in more than 70 countries worldwide, bringing patients from sick to recovering, from emergency to aid, from crisis to care. This life-saving care is made possible by a global movement of supporters like you. Thank you.
The Dom Salvia Show.
Harvey Kay, a professor emeritus of democracy at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. Harvey, I know you're the big FDR expert.
1934, he decided that the inequality and the wealth accumulated at the top was a threat not only to the American economy, but also to the American democratic spirit, American democratic life.
Sounds like history's repeating itself.
The Dom Salvia Show. Weekdays from 4 till 6 on the Civic Media Radio Network and on the Civic Media app.
Welcome to the Earl Ingram Show. Sandy Williams sitting in for Earl Ingram. You can call into the show today. It's 855-752-4842. Playing music about that one was, I think it was called King for a Day by Ecstasy. But I'm talking about the king and his court, the creation of this cabinet. The whole thing, suddenly a couple of days ago, I got the sense that what this felt much more like was the assembly of a court by a king, with loyalty tests being the most important standard for admission to the court and for continuation on the court. And we saw that from 2016 to 2020, how important loyalty was and how quickly one could get banished from the court. And it'll be interesting to see how this plays out going forward. But it's clear that going into this next administration, they've elevated the loyalty test to a much higher degree. And the next member of the court I wanted to talk about was Peter Hegseth, who is the nominee for the Department of Defense Secretary. And what's interesting about Hegseth is that, you know, much of what the right is talking about now is how upset they are with the Ivy League smarty pants Democrats, okay? But Josh Cawley, one of those people, Ted Cruz, one of those people, Peter Hegseth, one of those people, J.D. Vance, the vice president, Donald Trump himself, all of these people went to Ivy League schools. Peter Hegseth is a Princeton graduate. Ted Cruz is a Princeton Harvard graduate. Josh Cawley, Yale. The president, Wharton School at Penn. All of these are the same Ivy League institutions that are apparently what epitomizes what's so awful about the elite liberals. So what is it that differentiates these people? Apparently, only thing that differentiates them in terms of their elitism is that they are members of the elite right, okay? And they came out of these institutions with a conservative bent rather than a liberal bent, which apparently sanctifies them. It washes them of this taint of having been to an Ivy League school and puts them in the list of preferred entrants. So Peter Hegseth, who is he? Well, went to Princeton, served in the National Guard, and had several tours of active duty in the military at a low officer level, and then has been a Fox News commentator, made money on the side, apparently a considerable amount of money on the side, but has no experience running a big business. He has no experience at a senior level in the military. And his primary claim to fame are several books he's written, which if you read them, I read reviews of them and summaries of them, are pretty horrifying. The things that he stands for with respect to the military are, one, to get rid of what he would call wokeism in the military. What is his definition of woke? Well, it has to do with diversity. There should be, as far as he's concerned, there should be no diversity initiatives in the military whatsoever. He doesn't want women in combat. He wants women to play the role that is more natural for their gender, whatever that means. And he's very big on loyalty to the president and commander in chief, political loyalty at the highest level of the military. And what are we talking about in this new Department of Defense? Well, they're talking about installing a loyalty review board. One of the first things that Trump is talking about doing is to carry out a loyalty review of all of the top brass of the military and to de-rank or even court-martial anybody in those top ranks who doesn't pass a loyalty test, okay? Now, I mean, I don't think they use the word loyalty. I think what they use is a term that's designed to mean the capability to lead. But clearly what's involved here is ideological loyalty to the president of the United States to be a part of the top brass of the military. He wants to purge the top brass and replace it with people who have this characteristic. Well, what does that sound like? I mean, if you have a military that's essentially pledged its fealty to the leader, you have something that looks like a civilian-led junta, okay? I mean, in the Banana Republic, you have military juntas that take over governments, meaning that the military put their might behind somebody, and then that somebody gets elevated to be leader of the country with the support of the military. It's pretty hard if the military is willful about this. Who can stand up to the military? I mean, there's nobody that can stand up to the military in a country because they're armed and nobody else is. So seizing control of the military in this fashion is a very invidious prospect, as far as I'm concerned, for what it is that America has been and what it is that America could be in the future. And whereas we have General Mattis and others who will tell you that the pledge taken by people when they enter the military and become an officer, their pledge to defend the Constitution is what will override anything that the president does. But the fact is that the president is the commander in chief. And if the commander in chief orders you to do something which you might view to be unconstitutional, you are put between a rock and a hard spot. You can do the undoable as far as the military is concerned and defy an order because you believe that it's unconstitutional and then stand up to court martial for that, or you can defy the order and see where that gets you, okay? And so the question is, how many people in how many circumstances put between that rock and that hard spot will do the right thing as far as the Constitution is concerned, or will they do the right thing as far as military protocol is concerned and follow the order? I mean, I think we found out in Germany that there were plenty of people in Germany who fell back on the notion that I was following orders, okay? And that's why I did what I did. And in fact, as far as Nuremberg was concerned, the court in Nuremberg gave plenty of people an out for that reason, because if they were far enough down the line in the military and were following orders, that was the defense that overrode all other things. Now, I'm not saying the military is going to be turned on the American people, but having said that, I think one of the things that we're talking about doing in this next administration is using the military within the United States to carry out the orders of the president. And in this respect, it's with respect to what he would describe as illegal immigrants, to round them up, okay? And I think that there was an exchange of tweets in which somebody tweeted that the president was going to declare a state of emergency and he would order the military to be put under the command of ICE for the purpose of carrying out the rounding up of immigrants. And the president put out a tweet and captioned it true with respect to that very tweet. So apparently Donald Trump does plan on doing this. So, you know, when you talk about military juntas and the danger of a military junta and what it might mean to politics in the United States, and we can dismiss it as not likely because those in positions of command will follow their promise to uphold the Constitution before they follow the order of the President of the United States, I think we better hold our breath on that one, okay? And I think what we would prefer to see is a President of the United States and a Secretary of the Department of Defense who have as first and foremost in their mind the protection of the Constitution. I think that Peter Hegseth is someone who you can doubt with respect to that quite easily. His books suggest that he wants to use the military to deal with the ideological left, that he talks in the same terms as Project 2025, suggesting in his books that essentially the those who are protecting the sanctity of the United States, the cultural heritage of the United States. Remember when I was talking about what it was that was the playbook for authoritarianism? Peter Hegseth in his books talks that same language, and he talks about how it is that the military is the last bastion to protect the United States against these dangers that are posed by the left. It's all very much as if Joe McCarthy would be appointed to be Secretary of the Department of Defense in many respects. When you read the books and then you think about this person taking charge of the military, it's frightening. It's quite frightening. I think we have Mike from Kenosha on. Mike? Yes.
Good morning. Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
Hey, I have to say, first of all, anybody in my world, in how we were raised, any official who takes the oath to the Constitution, even if it's at this point a civilian, to me, when push does come to shove, they have the same obligation to defend the flag as if a soldier would be on the battlefield. And I'm serious when I say that. If we have a executive in office who is sworn to protect the U.S. Constitution, my expectation is he steps up in a big, big way. And I'm really concerned about where we're going. I like what you're talking about regarding Hegseth, you know, but I don't like when we continue to talk about Fox News being news, because they're influencers. Hegseth is an influencer. They're not journalists. They have nothing. Do they have their own agenda? They don't have the public's agenda. And that's, to me, what differentiates them between them. But like so many of your callers have said, the narrative, the messaging that the right wingers have been allowed to do for decades, especially in these rural areas, has absolutely changed the way the thought process of these Americans, and it's rotten to the core. They've been insulting and doing the divide and conquer since Limbaugh was talking feminazis, for crying out loud, back in the late 80s and early 90s. That's how long we've allowed these people to go down this cesspool, this narrative of divide and conquer politics, and it's worked. So, you know, I just have to say this. If you elect the wrong people to serve in government, these people who have been known to be self-servants and have shown no loyalty to the U.S. Constitution, you get what you deserve. And I'm sorry to say that, but I'm so disappointed in America. We had all the warning signs. In my opinion, this is a layup election, and we fell flat on our face, primarily because we let them control the BS narrative, and we never, ever demanded to have equality and you know, truth to power as our founding, you know, guiding light when it comes to debates or our elections. No, we sold our elections down.
We had a caller who called in and talked about neurolinguistics, this notion of the notion that these influences are actually grooming us in a manner. What do you think we do about that? I mean, you don't want to revert all the way to censorship. So how do we deal with the fact that there is this neurolinguistics going on, this grooming, this influence process that takes people down a path that they think is sound as far as they're concerned? You know, they think they're pursuing a path of loyalty and patriotism, but they're being groomed in a manner. How do we deal with that?
I think fact-checking, number one, calling things out, you know, for example, trickle down. Still, you know, we have an economy that's rocking and rolling. The problem is it's not trickling down. And if we would revert back to, hey, guess what? You know, if we had the same tax code that we had back in 1975 as you know, now, we'd all be making $40,000 more a year.
Hang on, Mike. We're going to a break. We'll be back shortly for the last segment.
listening to Oshkosh Air Support, WISS, home for the Maggie Dawn Show.
Everyone on the road is trying to make it to their destination safely. You can help by staying aware of the large trucks and buses around you. They take longer to stop, have large blind spots, and make wide turns that require caution from other drivers. It takes all of us working together to share the road safely. Learn more at www.sharetheroadsafely.gov. Paid for by FMCSA.
When severe weather hits and the power goes out, do you have a plan? For reliable power and peace of mind, propane can do that. It only takes about 10 seconds for a propane-powered generator to restore power to your home. So no matter what Mother Nature has in store, you know you're prepared. Learn more at WIPGA.org. This message is sponsored by your local propane provider and the Wisconsin Propane Education and Research Council.
Max Inc. Radio.
Is Paige Kleber. The 11-year-old will be live in studio playing songs from her new album. I'm Terry Barr.
Saturday and Sunday night starting at 6. The Todd Alba Show.
Zomers, are you a Netflix and chill guy?
Do you know what Netflix and chill means?
I thought it just meant watch something on Netflix together.
You say that's what you're going to do, but you're really having them over there for sex.
This is why nobody wants to come to my place anymore. I say, hey, you want to come over and have Netflix and chill? People keep saying, well, no, I don't think so. I'll take it back. And I just thought they were being rude.
I do have Netflix, though.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Out here in the middle of these acres, it can feel like you're the only person on Earth. That's how it feels when you're struggling with your mental health. But you don't have to feel alone. Find more information at loveyourmindtoday.org. Brought to you by the Huntsman Mental Health Institute and the Ad Council.
You're listening to Oshkosh Air Support, WISS, the Fox Valley's home of Mino and the Mayor.
Well, I'm a crawling king snake, and I rule my den.
Good morning, the Earl Ingram Show, last segment. Sandy Williams sitting in for Earl Ingram. He'd much rather be here, but he's not. And that's The Crawling King Snake by John Hooker. Today's show has been about, in my mind, what we're watching in Washington looks much more like a king putting together his court. And I don't know, for some reason, I thought the title of Crawling King Snake was kind of an interesting one. But I think we have Mike on the line. But is Mike still on the line, Calvin? But so we were before the break talking about how it is that we've got coming into our government people like Peter Hegseth, who is in many respects much more like an influencer than he is like and a gadfly. Than he is someone who's positioned and qualified to be Secretary of Department of Defense, and the extent to which this incoming administration is kind of premised on a whole bunch of points of view that are the result of influencers and not the result of a factual inquiry, and it's worrisome. And I would point out that in the world of foreign affairs, the place that Peter Hegseth is entering in terms of military affairs, We have particular kind of quicksand with respect to that, because all of us baby boomers, all of the generations since the baby boom, have in some respects been groomed by the government through the Cold War. We were presented with information that was designed to tell us what it meant to be a patriot, and we needed to believe all of it. And then we all suffered Vietnam and the realization that maybe our government wasn't to be trusted in everything they were telling us about what it was that was right and what it was that was wrong. And then we went through Iraq. And so, you know, we have had a government that has put us onto a very kind of a quicksand with respect to what our foreign affairs are, what they should be, what's right, what's wrong, what's real. And now we have a world of influencing that has taken us in a direction that, as one of the early callers, Debbie mentioned, pointed out, was the Republican Party has gone from being hawkish in many respects, particularly hawkish in the direction of the Soviet Union and Russia, to now very dovish and supportive of Vladimir Putin and that administration, much softer with respect to what it thinks about authoritarian governments, and only hawkish about China. And so, you know, my fear, I talked about this on an earlier show, is, well, maybe there's some lemonade here. Maybe our foreign policy can get more real. But if our foreign policy simply shifts from being soft on the problems of Eastern Europe, but very hawkish on China and building up a huge military on the notion that we have to be ready to stage a major war with China, we won't make any lemonade. It's just a shift in direction. And so, you know, that was the beginning, I think. I think our foreign policy was maybe a beginning of us getting onto sort of soft quicksand with respect to what's real, what isn't, what facts, what can we believe. Then we had COVID. We had the politicization of vaccinations based on an inability to find a real source of facts. And Mike was pointing out, you know, now we have a world of influencers where fact-checking is very difficult. You mentioned fact-checking, Mike. How does one go about fact-checking when people go to an echo chamber and watch their influencer? Who does the fact-checking? Who does the intervening fact-checking in that kind of a situation?
It could be an independent panel, a mix of lefties, righties, you know, picked at random. Here's the important thing. When we allow CBS or anybody else to televise our elections, and all of a sudden they're negotiating the rules of the debates, excuse me. Wait a minute. It's our elections. It's not the media's election to negotiate, you know, the rules. That's the most absurd thing that it comes to my mind right now. So the first thing we need to do is reclaim our elections as our property, not the property of the donors or not the property of the influencers, for crying out loud. It's a fundamental 101 thing here. And we
I think the collapse of the media, the collapse of the business model of the media as we knew it has played a big role in that. And so the vulnerability of the media to its business risks has made them much more vulnerable to doing things like setting rules that are a negotiation between candidates who are going to be throwing ads to them, right? I mean, most media can report that this last quarter was very good for them because political advertising was big, right? So political advertising is the most important source of media money now, and it puts them in a very vulnerable position to our media. I think what we all need to think about, listeners at large, is what do we do in our next world, in this next phase of our world, where influencers are a primary way that people get their information? And what is the intervening source of independent fact that can create a factual basis for us to have as an underpinning when we listen to people with their opinions? You know, we have Snopes. There are these things you can go to kind of try and figure out the facts. But I feel that part of why our country is going where it's going and why we are vulnerable to authoritarianism is this very principle of echo chamber influencers. And I wish for us that we can work our way through it. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week. And I rule my den. Come on and give me what I want, baby. And I won't troll no more. Yes, I'm trolling now, baby. I'm trolling in front of your door. You got anything I want now, baby? I'm gonna crawl up on your floor because I'm a crawling Kingsley.
Welcome to the Fox Valley's Real News and Great Conversation, WISS.
What I know about courage, I learned from my adoptive mom. She said sometimes you just gotta hold on and know we'll get through this.
Mom, we are so high up. Hold my hand.
No, you hold my hand.
Here we go.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more. This message is brought to you by AdoptUSKids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
Thank you for listening to WISS Berlin, the Fox Valley's real news and great conversation.